So the more things change, the more they stay the same, right, fellas?
Or go back to the way they once were.
Yes, that's true, too.
Is staying the same? I don't know. I'm not even going to try to parse that. We haven't had enough weed.
We've
never had enough weed.
Have we never had enough weed, or have we never had any weed?
Well, yeah. we've had a little weed here and there, but we're not weed aficionados.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, we're back in my garage.
We are back in Kevin's garage.
Wedged between major appliances.
Yeah, I walked in today. See, here's the difference between Kevin's garage and Mark's garage.
Oh, here we go.
No. This is neither good nor bad. It's just that Kevin's garage is a functional
like garage. Envy.
it's a function. There's stuff. There's baby strollers. Today we're wedged in between an old washer and dryer because they just got new washers, which, by the way, kudos. They look quite wonderful.
Yeah, can I just say I understand for anybody listening at home or wherever you are, that for me to tell the story that I'm about to tell about an appliance, you could probably think, oh well, I should just go ahead and tune out now.
Just go ahead
and maybe
fast forward, yeah.
I can't say that you would be wrong. But let me just say that so basically this is what happened this past weekend. My in-laws are here, and my father-in-law's a do-it-yourself type guy. I'm really not, and shockingly. And my dryer died, and so he went and bought us a new washer. So we had two functioning.
That's why we're
two functioning washers and no dryer.
Yeah. Well, we have a dryer now because we had to go buy one by ourselves.
Oh,
afterwards.
He just bought you a washer?
Yeah. He was like, I was in there and it was on sale. And I was like, none of this is logic that works for me.
I must say we've done a number of shows in this garage, and I can say that 9 times out of 10 or 10 times out of 10 when we've come in here and shit's been really cramped and everything's moved around, it's when your in-laws have visited.
Yeah, that's true. Now, there's a little bit of a tectonic situation. The earthquake comes in when they're here, and then shit just ends up in a different place, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess that's where it lives now.
Tectonic.
Well, we made our little space. It's nice for me because right behind me is this washer, and I've been able to place my whiskey in my room.
Yeah, you got an extra flat surface.
Yeah, so I've got a little bar going on.
Consumables.
Yeah, which is, frankly, the most action that washer's seen in a while, or the dryer has seen in a while. That said, good to have you guys back. Welcome.
Well, we're happy to be back. It's always fun.
I'm happy to be here.
We're catching it. We're catching it at a reasonably temperate time. It's not 1,000 goddamn degrees in here. It's not.
No, we should relish this.
Yeah, we don't have to. Ryan's not fretting about, you know, the exact angle and position of the space heater.
The heater.
Yeah. So we've got
and you're not pacing back and forth in order to try to create breeze to cool
warmth.
You off.
Yeah, or breeze, yeah.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, let's get we have a few things including an album, I guess, this week.
Yeah, eventually.
We need to talk about. Okay, so I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
This is Somebody Likes It.
So, Ryan, I understand that you were drawn to a story that reminds me of my childhood.
Well, it reminds me of your childhood as well.
Yes.
Which I was around for some of. Don McLean, he of American Pie fame.
Not much else.
Well, and he's kind of okay with it. But he sold his handwritten lyrics to said song, American Pie. It's called American Pie. Right?
It is called American Pie.
Not the day the music died. But anyway, at auction to an anonymous bidder for $1.2 million.
And it includes like a lot of his process too, right? Like some things some roads that he went down that just didn't make, and then some other things that ended up becoming the final song.
Well, that song in particular has inspired like legions of theories about what it's
about.
Exactly.
He won't.
Well, this is my favorite quote from the article that I read about it is where are we? He says, "Oh, what you know? What does this song actually mean?" His quote is, "It means I never have to work again."
Huh. Yeah, so really it's about laziness.
Well, and the guy who wrote Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer said it put his kids through college.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think the listening to it, the day that this happened, I heard a thing on the BBC where they were going to people, excuse me, and asking just the average Brit on the street. They were reading the lyrics and then saying, "Do you know what this is?" And quite a few of them knew what it was, but a lot of them didn't. And then a lot of them, they would just take the two or three or four lines that they were read and try to guess like what the song was about just based on those lines. And they were coming up with Shakespearean things and all of these different theories. And it kind of made me start thinking, and I've thought this before a little bit, like the song is obviously known to be allegorical and refer to Buddy Holly. But
well, the beginning of it does.
Right.
Like, the day the music died, that part refers to Buddy Holly and Ritchie Valens et al.
And the Big Hopper.
Big Bopper.
But, yeah, I meant to say that. I meant to, instead Dennis I said Hopper. I said something about someone who hops.
I think he's just mixing in a bunch of ideas at some point, like that aren't coherent.
Well, okay, so this article here has tons of, like, apparently there are just lots of theories, and it kind of posits some stuff that make a certain amount of sense. And according to McLean, like, if you just read the handwritten lyrics, it's all there. So it's like a puzzle.
I've got this song in my head right now. I mean, we all know the song. We all know the chorus. That it's a juggernaut, which is interesting because it rambles and rambles and rambles and rambles. But man, that chorus is as hooky as it gets.
It's an earworm for sure.
Yeah, but it also, I guess, like originally when I found out that, until you said it just now, and you were like talking about how people have all these theories about what the song is about. When I heard about that, I was like, you played $1 million for a Don McLean song? Like, it's not like he's the Beatles or the Smiths or...
Well, okay, sure. But you say the Smiths. Smiths are much more important to you and better songwriters, are certainly a larger canon.
But that was I'm picking something that somebody would...
But this is something that was a major cultural touchstone and also a major touchstone for, like, a two-year-old kid
sitting
across the table from me.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like a one-hit wonder, essentially. That's what makes it fascinating to me. But you're right, and this is why I'm saying, but I'm rescinding my original opinion on that, given what you were just bringing up, which is that, a lot. There's a cottage industry built on trying to determine what the fuck this song is about.
The backstory that Ryan was alluding to is that when I was a kid, when I was
a very small child.
Very
this
small
was like
child.
The first song that you loved.
Yeah, I can only assume that this was on the radio all the time and my folks were a big fan. And anyway, I learned all the lyrics. It's an 8-minute song. Like, I learned all the lyrics as a 2 or 3 year old kid. My parents would drop me out at parties. So as you can see, clearly nothing has changed.
Did you just drop $1.2 million on the handwritten lyrics?
I did not.
He mortgaged the house.
If I dropped $1.2 million,
that's why the washer and dryer is sitting out here, because they got to get rid of them because they got to.
Sorry, sweetie, we were gonna send you to college,
we
but
just
I really
an Airstream.
That's for laundering the money.
Well, I have one thing that I want to talk about before we go on to... Well, you had something you want to say, too, and we don't have to belabor this point too long, but I heard about this on NPR today, and I was walking my dogs, just listening to All Things Considered, and this story was mentioned. Those of you that listen to All Things Considered, at the top of the hour and at the middle of the hour, they have like a 6-minute-long news of the day thing. It's just a quick roll of what the new, like the pertinent news that has happened, not long form. And this was in the news roll, and that is that Selena Quintanilla, the Tejano singer that was shot to death in 1995, I know.
By the president of her fan club.
By the president of her fan club in Corpus Christi. Her family, in conjunction with Acrovir LLC, which is connected to the University of California, San Diego, is now they are going to release a hologram of her and take her on tour.
Oh, good Lord.
And let me just say what Acrovir here. And by the way, this is
she playing with Tupac?
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Again, this is seriously connected with a major university, and this quote: the company is dedicated to the virtualization of humans in various degrees of anatomical and mental detail, designing a walking, talking, singing, and dancing digital embodiment that will react and adapt autonomously on Selena's behalf. And also, here's another thing. So it's going to sing. They're going to take it on tour. It's going to dance and sing Selena's old songs.
I do appreciate that you're calling it "it," not her.
Oh well, I mean, is it a her?
No,
it's a hologram.
Of course.
Okay. Well,
now that we've established that,
the finer points of gender and as it refers to holograms at another time. But I'm they also want to record new songs for this hologram to sing, this hologram to perform. Now, who's going to sing these new Selena songs, air quotes? No, it hasn't been determined.
Anyone?
And by the way...
Who sounds like
her? And by the way, Kevin, I do want to tell you now that I'm scrolling down this article that I'm reading here, it looks like that the reemergence of Tupac and Michael Jackson kickstarted this whole trend.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah, they did a Tupac... showed up at Coachella.
Coachella, yeah.
Yeah. He's like, "Hey, everybody." And they're like, "Aren't you dead?" And he's like, "Yeah,
I am, but I'm going to sing
something."
Why should your career have to stop when you die?
Right, exactly.
You know, this is more and more, the more that I read this, it's an article in the AV Club. I suggest anybody go and check out the AV Club article, Selena to be turned into a digital puppet, because it gets more and more interesting. Apparently, some parts of the family like this idea and some parts don't.
Are those the parts that aren't getting paid?
Well, her brother explained to the Associated Press, the images that they had of Selena were of poor quality. She looked like a ghost, he lamented, of the spectral shadowy apparition of a dead person.
So, well, I mean...
That's what it is.
I don't... It's just truly bizarre, and just bizarre enough that when you're in the middle of... One news article is discussing the recent nuclear deal with Iran, and the next is how the jobs report in March wasn't as stellar as they'd hoped it would be. And then sandwiched in the middle is they're going to make a hologram of Selena Quintanilla.
So, yeah, let's just get ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'll look forward to that virtual tour.
Did you want to say something, Kevin, about what you heard this morning? Because I would like you to touch on that just a second.
Oh, wait. About what this
morning?
About
Madonna.
Oh, yeah. No, I just I made the comment before we launched tonight that I caught a little bit of the Madonna interview on the Stern show today. And what an obnoxious piece of shit she is. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, life is hard. None of us have it all figured out. It's hard to be. You know, I mean, I'm sure that. If you're a bigger target, you're a bigger target. Wasn't that the words of Billy Corgan at one point? Someone.
If you're a bigger target, you're a bigger target. Sounds about about right.
Yeah, so, but anyway,
profundity, and he's a dick.
Yeah, he's an ass too. But anyway, I just caught about half an hour of that interview, and it was a half hour too long. I was like, anyway,
I saw the Truth or Dare documentary. It was still in theaters, but it was at the Dollar Theater, and I was with my high school girlfriend. I don't know why, because it was just last week, but
it's still at the theater.
But no, I indulged her and went with her to see that whole fucking self-indulgent piece of shit movie. And what I told her when we left is, if I never see Madonna again, it'll be too soon.
You know what I think? Here's what I think of her. I think that she has a little bit of the Johnny Depp problem, which is to say that she's begun to affect a non-specific European accent, and she probably wears too many scarves.
Oh, that's been that way for a while.
Yeah. Well, that's true, but Johnny Depp has talent.
I'm definitely on your side about that. I mean, she's great at being completely obvious in every reinvention. She can't sing. She never could. But, I mean, you know, whatever. She's in some ways the ultimate American pop singer, if you think about like what when people talked about Madonna for years, it wasn't her talent. It wasn't her musical shifting.
Ambition.
It was her ambition. That's what I was going to say. It's her ambition. She makes a lot of money. Ergo, she deserves
living the dream.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But no. But can you tell us one or two examples of Or did you block it from your mind?
Oh, you know, I mean, those. So the way that Stern conducts his interviews, he's actually a really terrific and super engaging interviewer. And part of the way that he gets to the finish line on these, aside from the fact that he's just, you know, he's broadcasting on Sirius XM, where you can actually go a little bit, you can work further, a little bit bluer than you can on terrestrial radio. And beyond that, like, you know, the guy just has worked on his craft. And part of the way that he gets people to open up is that he is actually really vulnerable as an interviewer, like in a way that doesn't happen often, I think. So if you go in there,
trust him and they'll open up further themselves.
Right. But if you go in there and you're, you know, and you sort of consider yourself precious, which she clearly does, like, you know, she opened up a little, but it was like, you know, and I'm totally open to the idea that there could be somebody interesting who I just don't appreciate as a musical entity. And yeah. I'm not a fan, but I was open to the idea that, okay, maybe here's an opportunity for me to learn a little bit more about this person who I don't know very well, but I've heard about throughout the years. And anyway, she sucks.
She does suck. She does have one song that I do like, and that's Ray of Light.
That's a good song.
Yeah. And I don't know.
I like, but I think that the video that Ali G's in, but I think that's more of the production. I like the production on that than.
Yeah. Well, she finally hired some good producers, you know, further into her career. But at some point, we should talk about a record that we're here to actually.
Anti Madonna.
Yeah, this is
that's a good way to put it.
In a lot of ways, this is. This week we're going to cover an album by somebody who is, I wouldn't necessarily say totally diametrically opposed, but largely, like, just in approach and.
I'm trying to think of something in common. They're both female.
They're both women.
There's that.
Yeah. So anyway. I'm speaking, of course, of the new Courtney Barnett record.
Sometimes I sit and think, and sometimes I just sit.
Yeah.
Great album title.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
great album art.
And a poorly hand-drawn picture of a chair. So,
in the middle of a room.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'm super excited. I was excited when it was my turn, and originally last week, I do want to cover the Kyle Kinane, not Kyle Kinane. Yeah, it was Kyle Kinane. I get it. Kyle Kinane and Kyle Cease mixed up. We're both very funny and very, very different comedians. But anyway, when we do the Kyle Kinane record, we'll wait another cycle, and hopefully I can bring a working comedian to come in and sit with us and talk about comedy, which will probably bore him to tears.
Well, but the show will finally be funny.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, finally. Bring in a ringer. But anyway, yeah, so when I decided to set that aside, the fawning adoration over this record, and it's still, you know, kind of, it echoes a little bit off of, reverberates off of South By being here a few weeks ago, has been the emergence of this Courtney Barnett record, and so I kind of wanted to dive into it and see what all the fuss is about. And one of the things that I think is kind of sometimes a little bit, not necessarily a challenge for us, but we spend some time going back to different eras and listening and sort of encapsulating things that we just never got to know along the way. And this is something that's sort of out now that seems to have captured a certain degree of the public imagination. I thought it might be fun to cover.
Yeah, it's currently zeitgeisty.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. She was the hit of South by Southwest. I mean, without a doubt.
Well, and I didn't know dick all about her. And so Kevin, his lovely wife and children, come in the other day to the restaurant. He's like, hey, you've been listening to the record. I'm like, yeah, man, I love it. He was like, yeah, she was all over during South By. And I'm like, damn.
He's like, wish I would have known that.
Yeah, I'd never heard this record till last week. I'd read an interview with her in Salon, and I'd heard like a clip of one song on Sound Opinions.
She's coming back in early May. They just announced that she's going to do an Austin City Limits appearance.
Nice. Those are really hard tickets to get.
They are hard tickets to get, but at the very least, like, I don't know if they announced it. I don't know if they put them
on
sale.
I'm sure that's very helpful for everybody that's not in Austin, but that's good information.
No, it's good for me to know. Whatever. Maybe. Like,
no. Yeah. Yes.
If you are in Austin or want to get to Austin in order for that ACL taping, check their website.
Yeah, sometime in mid-2015.
Yeah.
Skylar liked Courtney Barnett. I remember her making me listen to this song, Avant Gardener. That was on, or Avant Gardener, it was on the album before.
It was actually an EP that she called the double EP. It's like, which I think is kind of fucking hilarious.
Was that a bra joke? I don't get it.
No, it's like a, it's an EP, but it's like a double. Like it's like, oh, you mean like just an album? Yeah. Like, yeah. Kind of. Yeah.
Well, she, I thought it was good, but I definitely didn't, I didn't remember it. And then, so this album I started being, becoming aware of end of last year, like I would say November.
Well, this record,
like,
okay,
the record came out in March, but the single for the record started hitting around December or January. And,
yeah, the official release date, and Kevin and I had like some discrepancy about this.
I read two different things a couple
weeks ago, but I guess like it had been making the press rounds or something
in
earlier
late January.
Radio.
Yeah, the official release date was March 23rd. So, yeah, it was not, it wasn't very long ago that it actually came out for realsies. But
that's what they're officially calling it now, yeah, in the industry. Like,
well,
the for realsies drop date.
Yeah, yes, that's for realsies.
Where's that t-shirt?
I completely had forgotten about that other song until I started talking to Skyler a few days ago about this. But the single, Pedestrian at Best, to me, I can't stand. I think it's nails on a chalkboard. It's just too clever for its own sake by half, and no real song there. So I was not looking forward to listening to this record at
all. Well, I must say this respectfully, but you're on fucking crack.
And
I can't stand the song. I hate it. But I think that the record, in fact, I'll say this, like the first time I listened to this record all the way through, well, the first song, Elevator Operator,
that sounds like 100% up your alley.
It were half as long, like for some reason, like in Skyler, I'd ask her this. I asked, "Do you like this song?" And she said, "Yeah, but for some reason, I wish it were half as long." And I was like, "Me too." I even wrote that in my notes. Like, I don't know what it is. But then after Pedestrian at Best, then the rest of the record, like, I wrote this down in my notes initially. The first passage through, quoting you from Loopy Fiasco, Tetsuo and Youth, best album we reviewed that I won't ever listen to again. But then I listened to it again, and my next note is, but it's now it's won me over. And I think it's great. I think it's great.
I think it's a fantastic record.
Well, I think it works.
Like two very enthusiastic thumbs up, 9.5 out of 10, 5 stars. Like,
it's not that good.
It is.
It's good.
To me, I'm going to, like, okay. Remember, like, when you turned me on to Velocity Girl.
It's a great, like, it sounds like the best parts of it sound like Britpop circa 1994.
Well, it's kind of stylistically all over the map, but like Velocity Girl, when I first heard that record, I was like, oh, I really love this, and I'll probably like this for the rest of my life, and that's how I feel about this, although I think it's a better record than the one I'm comparing it to.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you that. I think it's a really, really good record, but the part, okay, this is what confuses me about it. I really like this record a lot, so don't get me wrong, and just bear with me for a second.
But,
well, no, it doesn't have anything to do. I'm just curious,
with
like all of the press releases and all of the DJs and stuff. The two comparisons that I've heard the most compare her to, Kurt Cobain shows up a lot.
Liz Phair.
I haven't heard Liz Phair. PJ Harvey and Kurt Cobain show up a lot.
Okay, so I didn't read any reviews of this, and on purpose. And I definitely, and it's especially in the song that you don't like, there's definitely a Kurt Cobain thing going on there, or a Nirvana thing going on there.
Maybe that's.
But it was like if you took Bob Dylan and Kurt Cobain and kind of crossed them.
I don't hear the Kurt Cobain at all. Like, I mean, the Dylan stuff.
Oh, there's
kind of a little bit, but these songs are Britpop songs. I mean, they're not.
Well, one thing that you both said that I think is kind of true, and I think it might be a little bit of a movement, or at least a mini movement that's happening right now, is that there is a lot of sort of mid-90s-esque, like for lack of a better term, alt-pop or alt music that's coming back into favor.
Yeah, Always. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that. Well, we haven't talked about it on the air, but that Canadian band, Always.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a lot. All you have to do is look at fashion right now. It's 1994.
Well,
you
it
know.
Cycles through.
Yeah. But this is the cycle right now, which I have no problems with.
As somebody who really enjoyed that era the first time around.
Well,
and
the other band that kept coming up to me is the Breeders. And like, so this record will kind of, you know, it has its supercharged moments and then its poppy moments. Then it kind of has, there's one song that's kind of semi-bluesy and a sort of surrealist.
Yeah, it's Small Poppies, but that's my favorite song on this record.
That doesn't surprise me.
She's funnier than any of those acts, too.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
the other thing.
No, well, like, and so the article in Salon was like, the gist of it was like, here's the new Bob Dylan and she's Australian. And I think that does a disservice to Courtney Barnett.
Yeah, I think, well, at the very least.
I mean,
like,
I just am not a big Dylan fan, and I fucking love this record so much.
No, yeah.
And she's as good, strong a writer as him, and I'll say it, absolutely, lyrically. But the music's so much better.
Well, and
the music is so much more like what you want to hear.
Of course.
Well, and it's also a subjective thing to say. So is, you know, life.
Well,
but,
and that's like that's kind of what this podcast is about. I don't know if you've been paying attention.
You're throwing out superlatives without like.
Here's the thing. I think that it's cool. Like, I get the strong reactions on both sides. Like, you know, I think that it's like anytime that you really connect with an album, I feel like it's a little bit like catching lightning in a bottle. Like, it just doesn't happen that often.
No.
Especially like the more that we do these over, you know, week over week, you know, you can't help but look at these.
This is absolutely my favorite record we've covered so far.
It's up there for me.
And
more
like,
than Meatloaf?
And slightly.
Yeah.
Normally, you know, I'll listen to a record like maybe once through if it's a giant, you know, smoking turd. And twice through, or maybe three times through, if I like it more than that. I've been listening to this virtually on repeat for the last week. I mean, I've probably heard it 7 times all the way through. Put it on while we were setting up the restaurant the other day, and 2 different server assistants came up to me and were like, hey, is this Courtney Barnett? Like, they just hadn't heard this record yet, but they knew of her.
Yeah.
And these are guys that are, like, just pouring through, like, you know, kind of like we were when we were around that age, where we're just looking for new music constantly, and then, like, when you latch on to something that's good and everybody's telling each other, and I've gotten evangelical about it in that I'm just talking about Jesus and Courtney Barnett all the time. I've been telling people, I'm sending out text messages to my music geek friends, like, dude, you should check out this record. Like, it's good.
I'm glad that you're excited. It is a great record. It's definitely one of the best records that we've talked about. You know what?
We should play a track.
Yeah, let's get into the first track.
Let's do it.
Elevator Operator.
All right. Elevator Operator. Here we go.
So yeah, a little bit of Elevator Operator, which to me sounds like a middle-aged man's Ferris Bueller's Day Off moment. Like, what I particularly dig about that song is that it's not, you know, like people have compared her to Dylan or whatever, but it's not just like poetry. It's like kind of somewhere between poetry and prose, and she paints this picture of like this guy who's just like, screw it, I'm just gonna go do what I want today.
Yeah, the lyrics are good.
Yeah.
Well, and I do think that one thing that she does have in common with Dylan is, like, especially with that song, is like that song, the lyrics are always propelling you forward, and it feels like you never quite get there.
Yeah, the best Dylan songs, like, you know, you're taking a ride.
She sounds like, on that song in particular, and a couple of songs on this, to get back to, for me, what this album at its best sounds like, a mid-90s Britpop album. She really sounds like an Australian Justine Frischmann on that. Like, there's a lot of Elastica.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's a good point. And actually, the fact that she's Australian, that's something I wanted to bring up, is that I appreciate the fact that she sings with her accent. There are a lot of like British and Australian acts or whatever that, you know, that break through here, like which I think they try to.
They get
inflect,
coached out of it.
Yeah, they try to inflect an American accent when they sing, and she clearly just doesn't give a fuck. I mean, or either she doesn't give a fuck or she can't, like, sing an American accent.
Well, I think that it, whatever the reason, I do think that that's part of, like, a little bit of the charm for American audiences. Like,
yeah, like Australian accents are fun.
Sure.
Like, it makes it sound like you're about to crack open a beer and have a good night.
Yeah, we might get out the big knife and stab something. I don't even know what that means.
I think that's a
Crocodile Dundee thing.
Yeah, it's not a knife.
Yeah. Anyway, another, yes, telling signs
Kevin,
of age.
I saw you bust up, open your book here.
Yeah, no, I just think one of the things that's incumbent upon reviewing something that's out and in the public mindset right now is that there's a lot of material on it. And I will say that I did not pull down the Chicago Tribune review of this record, which was 100 out of 100, because it's behind a paywall. And I was like, I'm not going to subscribe just so I can
read somebody basically masturbate.
Yeah, but I read the first like snippet of it before it tried to strong.
Well, as much as I love it, and I do, I don't think it's flawless, but it's damn near.
Yeah, and I think it's solid and fun. Anyway, yeah. You know, one of the things that one of the things that gets referenced in one of the reviews that I read, I think this one's Pop Matters, from Pop Matters, was talking about the fact that she sort of has an insomniac mind, and I could see how that, like, it does sound like that could be the case. Like it says, one of the tracks, the illustration of loneliness, sleepless in New York. Talks a little bit about her being lovesick and homesick and her mind wandering as she traces cracks in the wall, which lead to her daydreaming about a future foretold by palmistry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of the tracks are like that, where they sort of take you down these little paths, and it's like it puts you in that weird little spot inside her brain, and I think it takes a clever songwriter to do that.
Well, I think one of the interesting things as somebody that it's funny that you guys are going on and on and on and on and on and on about her lyrics, whereas normally I would be.
Typically,
you guys are
the other way around.
Shit. What I appreciate the most about her lyric writing is that she writes, and this is the thing that I love about Morrissey the most when he was at his best in the Smiths. The people that I like are the small little vignette.
Yeah,
moments.
the little details that you wouldn't
have
thought.
That's what makes Dylan good. I guess that's why people. The things that I appreciate about Dylan most, when I, you know, we just recently talked about Blood on the Tracks. I don't see a comparison at all. I don't even understand why. In fact, we're not going to have a comparison Bob Dylan anymore. It's just because she does sing-songy sometimes, but because they don't write.
Well, it's her clever wordplay is what the article that
it's,
I read.
They're totally different.
Absolutely,
this is
I agree
this
with
is
you 100%.
Yeah, this
I mean,
is
in
little...
the sense that there's a guitar and somebody has a voice, they are incredibly similar.
Okay,
but. But the details, that's what makes her lyric writing exciting to me. But honestly, guys, what I really appreciate about this record is how solid her melodies are. I mean, the melodies super solid on
sure.
this.
That's the thing. It's a rare record where, you know how I kind of am about lyrics. Like, I don't normally notice them unless they're really good or really bad. And usually it's the music that hooks me first and... then I'll get into the lyrics if they're good, and then I'll get bored if they're, like, particularly bad. This one, it was a simultaneously occurring event. Like, I was like, oh, these are fucking solid songs, and holy shit, she can write some lyrics. Like,
and the band's good drumming. I don't know if it's one drummer for the whole record.
Well, but. And it's kind of stylistically all over the map. So, but weirdly, they hang together.
I honestly don't think it's stylistically all over the map. I think it's most of the album is really consistent, and that's that Britpop sound. I would say like 6-7 songs out of 11.
I kind of tend to agree with Shane on this. Like, I do think that like it feels like it's. I mean, certainly all feels like it's written by the same.
There's definitely some curveballs. A pedestrian song that I'd...
pedestrian at best, which you don't like, which is sort of it's more punk. Or grunge,
one,
if you will.
One,
it reminds me of that. What was... Oh, I'm sorry, Kevin. Go ahead.
Well, a couple of things. One last note. This is from the Consequence of Sound piece. I guess we'll just go on about things from Chicago. But they, like, one last little nugget on lyrical content says, like, and this is, this I think is interesting. I pulled this because this is something that we've actually, this is one of these people is somebody that we've actually covered before. And it says, like Stephen Malkmus or Kurt Vonnegut, interesting, Barnett looks at the mundane with a skewed perspective, turning it over in her mind and transmogrifying it into something extraordinary. Now, whether or not you believe that that's true, it's certainly not dull, and it's not linear.
And I feel like it does. Did I interrupt you?
Well, now the only other thing I was going to say, because Ryan had mentioned Pedestrian at Best, and you guys were talking a little bit about that. Yeah,
at Loggerheads.
Yes, at Loggerheads. This same piece says, on an excellent lead single, Pedestrian at Best, she warns us not to think too highly of her. Put me on a pedestal and I'll only disappoint you, she groans. Tell me I'm exceptional, I promise to exploit you. Unsurprisingly, yeah, the track is also one of the album's scruffier moments, the guitar distortion and burnt edges around her vocals matching her forceful delivery. So, anyway, it is punctuated, and that's probably one of the reasons why Shane had mentioned that it was the, you know, it was the
like
first
a novelty
single.
Song to me. It also reminds me of there's a song called Institutionalized by Suicidal Tendencies.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of that song a little bit.
I like that song.
Sure, yeah, I do too.
Probably the
once
only suicidal...
every 10 years or something. I mean, so this, like, it just sounds like a novelty song. And the rest of the album is so
well,
solid.
Well, and I knew you when Nirvana was kind of at their zenith and Kurt was still around. You weren't really much of a Nirvana fan.
No, I liked Nirvana. I just didn't like them as much. I liked them a lot. I just didn't love them as much as other friends of ours.
Well, this song,
I didn't think he was the voice of our generation.
Well, no, and he didn't want to be, and like, I didn't necessarily think he was the voice of me, but I fucking thought he was a really talented songwriter and performer.
Hey, you know what? Why don't we play that goddamn song?
Let's get into Pedestrian at Best. Shane wants to put it behind him, but I'd just like to hear it.
It's not that bad.
Here it goes. So I gotta say it's the origami line in the chorus that cracks me up.
I think that's the weakest line on the whole record.
I think it's fucking hilarious.
Are we on right now?
Yeah, we're on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I pointed to myself.
Anytime you hear Kevin say the word "so," followed by words.
Yeah, I have a little bit of that too. Although I do it more in like emails and text messages and whatnot.
Yeah, but, yeah. Well, I think we all do.
Yeah. Anyway.
But no, to me, like, okay, and I get your point, Institutionalized, I hear it now, like, but I get more like a hybrid of a couple different Nirvana songs, and then lyrically, it's about her, like, just telling somebody, look, I'm really going to fuck you up if you try to date me.
I just think that the lyrics aren't as strong as the rest of the record. I think it sounds like a novelty song. It's not a bad song comparatively.
I think the line, I think you're a joke, but I don't find you very funny. And it's done in the context of the song in a very melodic fashion. Like, I don't know. It gets me. Maybe I'm not that bright.
I just don't. I think that there's lots of better songs on this record, personally.
Well, yeah, we could go on at Loggerheads about this one, but...
we'll do that. Speaking of going on at Loggerheads, sorry to interrupt you, I heard an LED sound system on the radio today.
LCD.
Whatever.
That's a different technology.
Whatever they're called. Oh, thank you. thanks. I heard an LED sound record today.
By the way,
Grandpa.
On the googly flashes.
By the way, Loggerheads is the name of the bar that I'm opening.
Oh, yeah?
Are Ryan and I going to be, like, clinking drinks on the sign?
No, it's just we put people with opposing views next to each other with cocktails.
And make them talk.
Yeah.
That was a solid business plan,
like,
dude.
Wait, you have, like, animatronic, like, at, like, It's a Small World? Like, where you see the show, like, 10 times a day?
It's a weird deal. We have to have, like...
I like George Bush. I like Barack Obama.
We have to have 25 bouncers. So...
Well,
anyway,
sorry, yeah. LCD? Yeah.
Stepping
LCD
on my punch
LCD. Not LED? Okay.
Not LSD. Either.
Anyway. Woo! Anyway, whatever. I forgot my point. So I'll go back to where I
LCD sound system.
Yeah, I changed the channel.
Yeah, so we're going to... let's.
That's a good story, man.
Yeah, it was going to be better, but then I screwed it up.
God. All right, let's take a few minutes and do a few minutes with... Who's got... this week's track. Shane?
Shane's raising his hand.
Okay, we'll come back and talk to you about it in a minute. So I understand. Oh, I did it again. I did it again. Yeah.
Oh, it's okay.
It's like, now I'm going to be conscious of it. I'm going to have to come up with other words. If only I had some. This segment, this is frankly, I can't believe
How about the? Why don't you come out of every segment with the?
Yeah, maybe. I'll work on it. Game within the game.
With.
Yeah. So Chain, I can't believe that we've been doing this podcast for this long and neither you nor Ryan have trotted out what we're about to talk about, well, in any way, shape, or form, the band that we're getting ready to discuss.
Well, there's a reason for that, and partially that's because
the premise of the podcast
is stuff
that we don't know really well.
Well, but we've also done at least one round and a mixtape where we've talked about some other where we've relaxed those rules a little bit, and you guys still
that's
did
true.
Not take the bait. So,
well, okay, so the video that I picked this week is by the Smiths. And it's stop me if you think you've heard this one before. And anybody that knows me knows
that Shane.
We know you, dude.
Yes, I hope so.
Just the biggest ridiculous Smiths fan.
I'm a huge Smiths fan. Smiths Morrissey. I was gonna wait to do this video till Matt Munoz came back. Who, oh by the way, is looks like he's gonna start playing drums in a Smiths cover band. So,
what are they called?
Because we don't know
that's got to be the best.
The details are pending.
That's a list we have to make.
Actually, I think it should be called Stop Me If You Think You've Heard This One Before.
Well,
oh my God.
So, I just couldn't bring myself to do a Smiths album whenever we did our, and we're going to be doing this again pretty soon when we picked an album that we loved, partially because Ryan, I mean, we're all somewhat familiar with the Smiths, but this video in particular, this is a great song.
I knew the song already. I had not seen the video,
and I want to discuss this video.
Is it true that this is the last video that Morrissey made before he went on to his career of canceling concert appearances?
Didn't you say the band was broken up?
The band was broken up. Yeah. So this album. This is their last, Stranger Is Here We Come is the album that it came off of, and it was the last Smiths record, and the band was already defunct. This record was produced by Stephen Street, who co-wrote, in fact, already had most of the music written for Morrissey, and Morrissey came in and wrote lyrics and melodies for his first solo album with Stephen Street, which was called Viva Hate. It came out the following year. But anyway, so this video, and let's just establish, we already have, but I'll establish.
I just want to say, if there's an interactive dictionary online with an entry for self-indulgent,
this video should be, yeah, this video to me is everything that anybody would say to me in junior high and high school about how much they hated Morrissey. Like, this video makes me want to walk up behind him and just fucking smack him in the back of the head as hard as I can.
It does.
And I love his music.
It does. It looks like at least one central theme in the video is like, if this were like a comic superhero thing, there would have been some sort of accident with lightning and then Morsi would get struck, and then there would be like 1,000 Morsis on tiny bicycles that would ride around with him for the rest of the show.
So it's a testament to self-aggrandization. Or aggrandizement? I don't know, whatever.
Very self-indulgent.
Yes.
So
legions of Morrissey fans following him around with Smith's t-shirts on.
So he was the last member of the band that was willing to participate in this promotional video for this song, which is the last single off of Strangers Here We Come. And so he's riding around the city, and there are probably 15 Morrissey lookalikes. They're all wearing jean jackets. They're all wearing Smith shirts. They all have the same haircut. Essentially the same haircut.
Shaved sides of the head and like a big bouffant pompadour kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's like a 50s thing. Like one kid has like a...
Teddy Boys or whatever. There's like Elvis. Like mods, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. But Morrissey is doing his like, I want to be a sex symbol, but I want to be a nerdy sex symbol thing. And it's very... But so... And anybody that has spent any time with the Smiths or with Morrissey, I should say, not in person... I mean, your friend has.
I do have a friend who has spent some time with Morrissey.
That has spent any time with the oddity that is his persona. They're in the beginning of the video. They're riding down like an alleyway, and there's just randomly a picture of a poster of Oscar Wilde attached to this brick wall.
Well, as there are around most metropolitan areas,
and there continue to be. So basically, this video is just Morrissey like, oh my god, don't look at me, and there's all these lookalikes that are completely looking at him, and they just keep passing these posters of Oscar Wilde, and it makes me want to smack him on the back of the head.
It's pretty fucking ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous.
Meanwhile, the town where they're all riding
around.
I'm
assuming that's Manchester.
I mean, maybe it is. Whatever it is, it looks like it's closed.
Looks like it's closed. Salford Lads Club?
Yeah.
Who has a lads club?
I think there's some history.
European triad.
Yeah.
Europeans.
Yeah.
Europeans.
It's in Manchester. So, yeah, that's if you look on the inside of the record, The Queen Is Dead, which is the record before this one, you'll see all four Smiths members posing in front of the Salford Lads Club, and then he reintroduces the anyway, whatever. I'm just nerding out.
Oh, okay.
The reason I want you to watch this video is to let you know that it is possible for me
to actually recognize Morrissey being
not just Morrissey, but musicians that I
to not be a fawning Morrissey acolyte.
Yeah.
It's funny that you say sycophant. There's the first time I ever heard the word sycophant was that, whoa, there is a June bug in here, and Kevin is frightened by it. A look of terror just came over his face.
It's a little dark in here, and it looked like a bee.
He's coated in
resin or something.
In resin or
something. Okay, well, let's
paint.
Not raise it. Why don't you just move
it? He's dead.
I don't think he's going to rear the June bug.
Shane appears to be coddling the bug.
He's like, look at that. He's covered in paint. Or
good.
He's dead now, so the dog will eat it.
Okay.
So Morrissey
did a
thing once.
That was Morrissey's little missive. His little missive came in.
That's like his superpower. Like somebody's talking ill about him, so he sends his June bug army in.
So when Andy Rourke was,
I hope so.
Andy Rourke was the bass player from the Smiths, and he couldn't like. He one day he got up and he went, and there was a note on his windshield, and it said, oh, shit. Actually, you know what? This is Stephen Street, the producer. It said, Stephen, your services are no longer required. There was just a note under his windshield wiper.
Well, that's charming.
Is that the equivalent of breaking up the band by fax?
That'd be the Pixies. That's exactly where my mind was going.
Did that happen?
Yeah,
it did
happen.
He broke up the band via fax.
Frank Black?
Which is where we do
Black
the...
Black Francis at the time.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Do the...
Charles
David,
Thompson,
the David
if
Spade bit.
Okay. Well, that's Morrissey, and that's I would say it's the Smiths because, on paper it's the Smiths, but that video is Morrissey, and there you go.
Anyway, and worth mentioning, like one of the Smiths tracks that I actually really enjoy. So it was fun. Like it was interesting to pair that with that hyper ridiculous fucking video.
I love that song.
I do like the song
a ton. Great song.
Yeah.
And I do think that they should name their cover band Stop Me If You Think You've Heard This One Before.
I think that's pretty good. I'll pass that on.
Brilliant.
I'm thinking of asking Matt to come back in pretty soon. So we can discuss that with him when he comes
Excellent.
In.
Excellent.
Okay. We'll get back to Courtney Barnett.
Coming up.
We're back talking about
deliberate
Courtney Barnett.
Well, wait. You know what? The stuff that we talk about in between segments. It's one of those things that I'm so glad that nobody's recording it. But every so often, I wish.
Every now and then, we'll hit some.
I kind of feel
nuggets.
The same way. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that we and I know that a lot of people don't.
We'll have
do
the
this.
Deleted scenes and outtakes.
Well, we actually have a real time show for us. I mean, and for the show, like we watch the video in real time. Like we watch it in the break. You know, like it's one of the things that we agreed to do in the beginning. So it makes it a lot of fun for us. But sometimes when we're waiting around for stuff to get synced up, like we say some really stupid shit.
True things were never said. I'm
not gonna reference.
We won't
what was
go
just
back
said,
down.
But I just had to say that. So
there have been some truer things said.
But that's a pretty true.
We say
thing.
Some pretty stupid shit.
Yeah, that's true too.
When the mics are not on.
Yeah, that's true too. And some, and I will say, and this doesn't happen as often, maybe as the stupid shit, but. Also, some pretty funny stuff that we wish that we would have caught.
Well, sometimes the funny shit is like, the stupid shit.
Yeah, yeah, maybe the twain do meet occasionally.
But yeah, the reason why I'm saying this is because I felt a shiver all the way in my feet when you and Ryan and I were just saying some stupid shit, and Kevin made us think
that he'd actually been had it turned on.
Yeah. It scared me a little bit.
It would have been a thing that was.
I just had to work out the anxiety that I
was. It's a not safe for work conversation.
Yeah. Anyway, so that I was not. We were not recording, but suffice it to say that Shane is a bad person. No, I'm just kidding.
We knew that already.
I'm just kidding. No, yeah, no, we're. So yeah, sometimes there are things that we say that are intended to be on the show, and sometimes you're just jacking around with your buddies. And in this case,
I don't know. I don't know. If I like where that's going.
I don't either. I'm glad that you said it. See
sometimes you're on a camping trip and weird.
Yeah, that's actually like, an inadvertent. Such a fitting inadvertent expression
malaprop
goes on when you're like sometimes you're just jacking around with your buddies like yeah that's
so yeah
sorry Ryan God. I just stole your thunder for a second please
back to Courtney Barnett
steal something
please man I have nothing but good things to say and Shane this would probably overlap with what we were just talking about, like the stupid stuff we say off the air. He's like, please don't spooge all over this record like you did Yola Tango.
It's true. We do. I do enjoy bringing up Yola Tango every now and then because I could come up with new ways to say fawning adoration, which is exactly
yeah,
like.
Yeah, man. And you know, uncle, guilty as charged. Yeah. And I does probably make for not as good podcast when
Look,
I love something so
I don't
much.
Think all it's I... bad either, but I do think. you couldn't do that very often, and it would
if
be
you were if one were to have a government panel on how Jim Jones was as a human being and treated his
temple, to figure out where you're going with this, but yeah,
then one would not want the fact finders to be made up of Jonestown followers of Jonestown.
Yeah, you don't want to stack the jury.
It's not as interesting. But, we know where you're going.
Okay. The difference is, like with the Yolo Tengo record, I knew it for 20 years before we covered it. This one, I didn't know really jack, other than I'd read one article, which I've now read twice. Once before I even really knew who she was, I'd heard like a snippet on Sound Opinions, which, by the way, for those who listen, go listen to Sound Opinions too, because if you like this show, like, that one's so much better.
Hey,
and I think we're pretty good, but like, they're professionals.
It's a good show. And in fact, we can sort of take.
I'm not.
I don't mean like listen to that in lieu of this one. Like, listen to them both, of course. We do some things that they don't do. Like, you know.
We fight.
Yeah, but no, it's a really good show, and I really respect those guys. And
it is
so
a good show.
One of those guys, and I don't remember if it was Jim Derogatis or Greg Kot, but like one of them like really loves this record a lot and played a little snippet of it, and he was saying, "Oh, it reminds him of Patti Smith, and there's some blues in there, and there's some punk," and I'm like, and first of all, like it kind of put me off to it. Whatever snippet that they played didn't really do a ton for me. I thought it was interesting, but it didn't like
Estrian at best.
No. It was one of the other ones. I think it was one of the slower ones. And when he said Patti Smith, like, you know, I'd heard for most of my life that, or at least most of my, you know, post-pubescent life, that Patti Smith was this great genius or something. I finally went and listened to Horses after hearing that for years, and I did not like
Don't
that
get
record.
It.
Don't get it. No,
get
it's
it.
Another
it,
one that sounds like show tunes. Like,
I can put Patti Smith. I mean, I can think about. It's one of those things we've talked about this before. Like you know, Jimi Hendrix. You can imitate those notes, but why? Why did they do that? You can see. Don't put Meatloaf and Patti Smith in the same.
Well, no, way. She's clearly a much, much, much better artist and more interesting person.
I don't want to listen to it.
But I don't get that record at all.
I mean, but I can listen to it and see, like, in the context of the time when it came out, like,
in the end, doesn't it all come down to storytelling? Like, who is the more compelling storyteller? What's the more compelling backstory? So when you get to know these songs, you get to know them on their own merit, right? The way that you connect with the music and the lyrics and whatever the composition is. But it's also a little bit, as you dig into these, certainly in this environment, but I would think for the casual listener too, like, the more that you like listen, if it feels like it fits and it connects to you in some way, then, you know, there's something.
Well, no, and there's certainly nothing wrong with being a Patti Smith fan. Like, some of my favorite artists are big Patti Smith fans, and I'm just not one. But I think what Courtney Barnett does that Patti Smith maybe doesn't is, like, she can put music to those words, and, you know, in the same way that
we're talking about Patti Smith, not Patti Smythe.
Right.
Not Scandal. No.
Okay.
Wait.
Wasn't that her band?
John McEnroe's wife.
Patti Smythe?
It? Yeah.
Who knew?
Wait, wasn't she like a
John
musician
McEnroe.
From the 80s?
She was a musician from the 80s. Yeah. Had a lot of MTV play. Not a ton of legacy there.
No, she
You
not.
Know what there is legacy, though? Twisted Sister.
Oh, good
Goddamn
God.
Right, man.
Because there are still teenagers that are standing up to their parents saying,
"Hey, man, we're not going to take it.
We're not going to take it."
Yeah. All right, so God damn it. So I'm just going to hijack whatever that was. This is like we're kind of at the point where I feel like one of the things that we should do in the last segment is I had one of the challenges that I had with this record, in part because I connected to a lot of it, was that I'm drawn toward several of the up-tempo tracks. And the more that I get to thinking about it, the more I think we ought to include something that is like a little bit of a change of pace.
More languid.
Small Poppies.
Yep.
That's the song on the record, in my opinion.
That was the one that I thought that maybe we'll include instead next. So, Shane, this is the antithesis of what you felt about the first single. Go ahead.
It's kind of the antithesis of what I think about, like, if you people that are friends of mine that know my musical style, this would be the kind of the last one. There's this really interesting the guitar tone is so enveloping and so inviting. It's kind of bluesy.
Bluesy, but then it goes off on kind of a surrealistic cant to it.
Yeah, but there's just a lot going on that's really drone. She has a drone quality to a lot of her music.
This is the one that reminds me the most of like the Breeders, like slower moments.
I don't see that, but you know what? But I'll tell you this, and so I'm gonna go back and re-listen to this record and think the Breeders, mm-hmm. but I want you to go back and think this, and I'll tell you specifically which song I want you to think this on. So I said earlier, Justine Frischmann,
of Elastica,
and hold on just one second, and if you go to what's the third song on this? An Illustration of Loneliness, Sleepless in New York, which you like that song.
Mm-hmm.
She sounds like, and this is not, this is just a neutral thing. It's just a fact. She sounds like an Australian Sheryl Crow from Sheryl Crow's first couple of albums. Did you notice that when you listened to it?
I had not put that together.
Go back and listen. I'll go back and listen to The Breeders, but I promise you, it was really interesting. And I have no bad feelings about Sheryl Crow. I was just amazed where she sounds like what was the All I Want to Do Is Have Some Fun, the song that broke Sheryl Crow. Remember that was a sing
well, leaving
song.
Leaving Las Vegas was actually the first song that kind of broke
it was
her.
But the song that made her a superstar was
that would be,
All I Want to
do is Have Some Fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you remember back to that song, in that song it's a real sing song.
And it's kind of got like that rambling narrative to
right,
it.
Right, exactly. It's sing-song, like speaking sing-song is what I mean. And I listened to it and I was doing something. This is the first time through and I was like, am I listening to Sheryl Crow? I mean, in not a bad way. I mean, I have no opinion at all.
Well, the fact is, or the opinion is, at least for this guy, is like this, and I'll say it again, it's kind of stylistically all over the map. It doesn't settle into one. Like, you might think Sheryl Crow on one thing, Nirvana on another, Patti Smith on another. Who knows? Like,
I mean, agree with you on that, but it's consistent.
It all sounds
good.
Like her, but they don't. It doesn't sound like okay. Like when we listen to Jellyfish, those all sound like the same exact style of from the same
it's
band.
The same band, yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
Whereas this one branches out a little bit more. And in fact, in that interview in Salon, she said, like, well, I've actually got some country stuff, like, queued up, and maybe I'll just call it something else under a different project.
You know, she was originally part of a country psych rock band or some shit.
Well, like, and that's what they were saying on Sound Opinions, is that she's been in a bunch of other projects where she wasn't necessarily, like, the lead songwriter or anything, and she's just kind of come into her own. And what I liked about
that
interview is that she feels she seems self-confident without being overwhelmed. Like, she's kind of an introspective person a little bit, but she's without like soaking in the adulation. She's also like, well, I'm writing some pretty good songs right now.
She's having her Father John Misty moment.
Well, yeah, and I think in 2 years from now, like these are gonna be both more household of names.
Sure.
Father John Misty, since the time that we did his first record and
spoiler
alert,
because of it,
that's the one I'm picking next is I Love You Honey Bear. That's gonna be our first.
That's your next record, because I was actually thinking about.
Oh well, you can pick it too, but
no, I was thinking about doing the new single for my this week. It's either that or Taylor Swift.
Do Taylor Swift, because we definitely need. We've already had this conversation how we need to talk about the whole record. Because remember,
right.
a few months ago, I was going to do that. Yeah.
All right. Well, before we go too far down that path, which I think is
so let's,
maybe
yeah,
best,
let's
saved,
get into
let's get into Small Poppies.
Let's do it.
That sounds great.
And apparently, Shane has small poppies in his backyard, but that's a whole different thing.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That's another thing we'll talk about between.
Here's the song, Small Poppies.
Who am I to deny myself a pawn for you? At the end of the day, it's a pain that I keep seeing your name. But I'm sure it's a bore being you. I don't know why who I am or good man I am trying.
So that was Small Poppies. I did it again. It's going to continue to happen. I just
I
don't think it's a bad thing. We're all used to saying that. I just pointed it out.
Yeah. It's a transitional. What part of speech is so?
So
here's how I'll start. However, comma. That was that was Small Poppies.
Gerund.
yes. Anyway, yeah. So that was Small Poppies. And I do think it's like it's a clever, like it has the hallmarks of being a bluesy song without bluesy content, because she's still like a little goofy in there.
Well, the fun part about that song is that, and I'm not a big fan of bluesy.
So much of it is so rote, you know. Just,
it is.
They're just like the rules that you follow, and it's paint by numbers, and this is not that.
But the song goes on, like at the beginning of it, I was like, oh, this is so cliched. And then after about a minute into the song, I'm like, oh, I'm listening. And it just never gets boring. It's a fun song to listen to, and it definitely sets a mood. The music sets the mood of that song.
That is true.
And I do think it's another one of these where she lets you into the weird little space that is her mind. And like you just kind of follow along and see where it goes, and like she's great about like leading you further into the song without necessarily making you feel like you're being led, you know, follow the bouncing ball style.
Yeah, I feel like she's following her muse right now and just kind of clicking on all cylinders at the moment, and you know,
yeah, that's fun to hear. It's fun to hear an artist clicking.
I was actually thinking about this yesterday. I knew Shane. I've known Shane for a long time, and there was a time that he was writing a lot of songs. I remember you telling me at the time, like, man, I'm kind of just shitting good songs right now. And I was like, man, this dude's being really fucking arrogant. But it was true. Like, if you go back and listen to those songs that you wrote in that, like, six-month period, they were great, and you were just kind of firing on all cylinders at the time.
You know I don't like it when you...
I know you don't like me bringing that stuff up, but it's true.
But there is something to be said for being in the groove and then, like, not necessarily, like, self-awareness or no self-awareness, whatever it is, like, for kind of, like, riding the crest while you're there. And for some folks, like, there's no guarantee for how long that crest will last.
And it won't last forever. It never does last forever. And you might get it back sometime, but right now, you know, she's doing it right.
I think the key is, like, to recognize while you're in the hot spot and to do everything you can to, like, serve the muse. And seems like she's doing that, maybe.
But you guys don't, and you specifically don't ever want to do a show about Austin artists, but I really would love to do a show at some point.
Well,
about
I just
Spoon's
I like,
last record because
well, I could, that's different. Spoon's sort of national and international
like,
at this point.
I feel like I keep.
I don't want to run into. Okay, I don't want to do lesser known artists.
Trash
I don't want
their album.
I don't want to trash somebody's record. They go and listen to it, and I got to run into them at a show.
Well, what you're saying about like you lose it, and you may get it back. I mean, there are a lot of it. The Flaming Lips didn't, for me, find it until they were in their mid-40s.
Soft Bulletin?
Soft Bulletin.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, for me, the last Spoon record was produced by Dave Frischman, and not solo Dave Frischman. And I think it's the strongest record they put out in their career. And we're talking about, you know, early 40s. So at some point, I'd like to have a show where we talk about where we do an album by somebody in not the twilight of their career, but maybe somebody that's been putting out
further along.
Wilco's the same way. I feel like there are a lot of people that are more plugged in and tuned in to, like, it seems like there were a lot of guys like in the mid 80s that were knuckleheads that were getting deals that were one hit wonders. And then, or they had a band, and they were just stuck into the sound that they had that band with. I feel like now we have so many different ways to consume music that people that make music, if they choose to make music, they're so inundated with it and aware of what's going on that it helps their overall creative function. So you have artists going into way later than you would have had in the 70s making vital music.
Well, and I think there's also – you can also make the argument for the segmentation of the medium, which is to say that, like, there are lots of different ways to buy music now. There are lots of different ways to sort of, like – sometimes it feels like it's so segmented that maybe it's It's a little too specialized.
I agree with that.
Well, and if you're young when you have like a giant breakout hit, you're probably not going to be able to work past that.
Well, the point is like there are buckets where you can thrive and make a living, and maybe my hope is for the sake of like good art that maybe that gives some of these guys time to like sort of find their second wind, because sometimes that's what it takes. Like, you've got a second wind in you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Let's get
that's
out of
what,
this.
That's what I'm going to call my band.
You got a second wind in you? Dun, 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 dun. And then Kevin comes out like this is his motivational speaker. Like he comes out of the fog like, hey, everybody. Do you have a second wind in you?
I don't think that's
and they're meeting at
a
Marriott somewhere for $35 a head.
I don't think that.
Kevin's got one of those things that Garth Brooks used to have or Janet Jackson had like in the 90s.
A little mic that they wear in the McDonald's drive-thru.
Yeah.
I don't think that's
I don't know
what
where we're going with this, but
had in mind. But
I'm giving him his second career.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you. That said, let's move on to the last set. That was Courtney Barnett record, everybody. And then let's talk about what we've got coming up.
We have a current event.
We have a current affair.
I'm current event.
Shane's first time on the show.
All over the place tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a current affair. Ryan's picked a song tonight. Ryan, what's the song? Well, let's do the song. And we'll come back
Taylor
and talk
Swift
about it.
Style, and I've seen about.
Oh, you were talking about tonight. We were going to listen to Father John Misty or Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
I have to listen to a Taylor Swift song,
dude. Like okay. You asked me to pick a new song. And
you know what, buddy? I gave you Nickelback last week.
Yeah, well, we're listening to Taylor Swift this
week.
Okay,
so
it's compare and contrast.
Everybody, let's
just been listening to.
Let's listen to a Taylor Swift song, and I'll see you in a second.
So, since I'm back to producing the show this week, producer Mark is on the mend, a little under the weather, hope he feels better, but since I don't have the bumper music for Current Affair, we're going to go a cappella, and it sounds like we decided to do sort of an 80s video game thing.
Well, it's the bumper music that a Current Affair has. And we're going to approximate it together. Everybody ready for this?
We have a good idea.
Okay.
Idea.
All right, go.
All right, ready?
Sure, it's
going to
excite everybody.
All right, ready?
You forgot about that. That's how it ends.
That was right. Yeah. Also, yeah, I don't know. Where's the bottom? I don't know. Maybe we found it.
I was going to say, we just broke on through the boundaries at the top.
Oh, okay. All right.
Every week, it gets better and better and better. It's just the little details that we do, just like that.
All right. So we're going to share a little something.
Dialing up some Taylor Swift for a bit of compare and contrast.
All right. So we're going to fire that up now?
Yeah.
We are. Let's get into it.
Let's play a little Taylor Swift.
Style.
Cause I know exactly where it leads, but I watch us go round and round each time. You got that jeans.
Well, that was boring and expensive looking.
Do you mean it was boring? Really?
No, I genuinely think that was a boring video.
Very interesting.
Maybe it's because the song.
Were you talking about the song?
Well, okay. There's a lot of things going on in the video with technology and glass shards.
Why the shards of glass? That seems dangerous.
It was. Yeah, way too fucking shiny for its own, not the shards of glass, but the video was, and the shards of glass, I suppose, were way too shiny for their own good. I will say that, well, I'm interested about a couple, I guess the reason why I don't want to say it's boring is because I tend to find Taylor Swift songs boring. I mean, they're definitely my finger immediately reaches for the next channel on the radio station.
I don't think every Taylor Swift song is boring. Like that weird Never boring. Getting Back Together, I don't think is a great song, but it's not boring.
Can I just say for whatever it's worth, I think that we live in an era where especially artists that are intent on selling tens of millions of records and frankly other artists who are just looking to do that at least once are, and maybe this has always been the case, but it feels like especially the case today, are looking for anthems. And this is a song that feels like it's like hunting to be an anthem.
I think a lot of her songs are kind of that way.
They're all anthemic. I mean,
you know, she has legions of 14-year-old girls.
She has legions?
Legions. Yeah. She has legions on her. Dude. She also has 14-year-old girls.
I barely was it. I spit out. You made me spit, and I almost spit on your brother over here. Tank? No, I didn't have anything in my mouth except saliva at the time, but yeah. Oh, my goodness. Like, but, you know, here's
please don't sue me, Taylor.
That's interesting to me. So the chorus of the – okay, one thing that I immediately noticed, like this song, if you remove all of the dancey, glossy stuff, it is a country song. It's a modern country song.
Well, she's made that transition.
That's where she came from. Yeah. But this song in particular sounds like modern country radio. I mean, it's neither here nor there. But there's a thing, and she did this with the first single, the big hit off this record, the Shake It Off song. I don't know how it goes, where she's, you know, she's in 16th notes, like, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it. And this is like...
Any note of recognition.
Okay, right. Yeah. Well, she's got this, and you see this in other people now that are putting... Carly Rae Jepsen just put out a song that has this, like, really, 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 really. And she's like, it's just, this is a hook thing now where you have, like... 16th notes of whatever. It's this really quick thing that wraps up into a hook. It's interesting and at least not unprecedented, but this is like kind of like where she's gone stylistically, which is interesting to me.
Well, and we've touched on this a little bit before.
Can I just say one more thing?
Sure. Oh no, sure, go ahead.
It resembles dance music where you have like house music where it's always on, like, you know, like in a whole note you have four beats. Oh, and like say if you're in 4/4, you'll go like on the 1 and the 3, you'll have the beat, you'll have the mm-hmm. downbeat go. Well, on dance music, like house music, it's on every, it's like 1 boom 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 boom, and she's moving, like whoever's producing her is moving her songs and popular music into that sort of like, not dance music in the way that the music sounds, but dance music in the way that the hooks sound, like boom 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 boom. You know, it's just,
well, definitely a dance music sort of.
But if you removed the dance music, the electronic stuff, the way that the hook landed, the way that the beats landed, would be just like house music.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I kind of tuned out
Sorry.
A lot of it.
All right. Fuck you and fuck you.
I was talking about the song, not about you. I was talking about, you know.
Oh, you tuned out of the song. Yeah. I thought it was a crazy good hook. I don't want to listen to it ever again.
No, where I was going when I attempted to chime in for a second was like just that.
You attempted to be a Chinaman for a second.
Yeah, stop it.
Yeah,
let the man speak.
Yeah, but my thought was that I do think that this is kind of a conundrum for modern country artists, which is to say that like you have this hyper loyal audience that will make you indisputably rich if you're reasonably good. For a long time, for the rest of your life. But there's also that sort of, if you can connect that particular part of your fame to a little bit wider pop arc, like, it's not easily achieved. I think that she's kind of at this intersection where she can do some of those things that not a lot of artists can do.
I think she's kind of left the country thing behind, and she's just crossed over into this mainstream pop thing. And I sort of admire her as a business person. I just don't... Yeah, have
you're
a lot
in America.
Of,
how can you not admire business?
Hey, man,
people?
American dream, man. Well, Horatio Alger and shit.
Madonna.
Good God. All right. Well, anyway, Ryan, I've not seen that. I hadn't heard that song. I hadn't seen the video. But now that I have, like, I just think that it's probably a good idea for somebody, if you're near there, wherever they shot this, just go look for broken glass. Because there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of shards of glass in this thing that weirdly are playing different things than what's going on in the rest of the shot.
Yeah.
It's magic glass.
Which broken shards of magic glass, which is will be the name of my new band.
Do you guys remember that thing called magic sand?
It was like different colors that would turn different colors.
No, but also like you put water on it and it didn't get wet. Yeah,
I think that was like the first cousin of like sea monkeys.
No, it's a different thing. Sea monkeys were actually alive. If you took
Brian Shrimp. Brian Shrimp with magnifying glass.
more like a telescope. Even with the magnifying glass, you couldn't even see him do anything.
Sea monkeys,
that's some advertising. That's American ingenuity right there, dude.
Here's a dried packet of sea life. Anyway, we should move along and talk about next week.
Yeah, so next week, who's got next week?
I've got next week, Kevin. The other Kevin.
Right.
The other Newsom.
Yes.
We're doing the Yeah, Fever to Tell, which I know maybe one or two songs, but I think we're going to have our my youthful friend Peter on, who is he reminds me of me, like us when we were young.
We can go into this more next week, but just like the high level, what's your connection to Peter?
Peter is a coworker of mine at the restaurant I work at, and we've spent a lot of time together for a time, and I've brought him up multiple times on this podcast.
Is he the guy that gets subjected to all the records that you have to listen to every week?
Well, he doesn't anymore. He got a car.
Okay.
But he lives south as well as I do. We work north, so I would give him a ride home, and so we'd basically do the one-for-one kind of deal on Spotify, and I'm, you know, every now and then I'm like, dude, I got to listen to this for the podcast, and he has played me Fever to Tell at some point. I liked it, but I don't know it very well at all. And it's one of his favorite records. Yeah, is one of those bands that when they hit, you know, kind of in a similar way to the Strokes or Vampire Weekend or somebody, you know, like that was really zeitgeisty and kind of universally praised, but I just never have really...
you didn't feel the need to rush to it.
Yeah, I hadn't. And the stuff that I've heard, I've liked. So I'm looking forward to it and we'll see, and he knows it a lot better than us, and he's a entertaining individual. So,
and then Shane, you're coming up in a couple of weeks, or are you?
Yeah. So in a couple of weeks, I'm going to do the Father John Misty record, but the next one that I want to do, we haven't gotten into the '90s in a while, and I want to do Catherine Wheel, Adam and Eve.
Oh, I don't know that record at all, but I know of that band.
I don't know it at all.
Is that the one with Black Metallic on it? Or
No. That's Crank. That's a couple albums before, or Chrome. This is the album that is pretty much by Catherine Wheel fans, which there are a lot of, is pretty much universally said to be their best record. So,
all right,
I'll give it a.
It's the Queen is Dead of Catherine Wheel.
I guess
records,
so. I don't know. I've never listened to it. I actually bought it in a drunken haze one night about 10 years ago, and never listened to it. So
you know the story about what I had show up in my mailbox. We'll get out of here soon, but what I had show up in my mailbox that I don't remember ordering off Amazon.
Panties?
No,
panties?
No, it was chicken soup for the butt.
Oh, I do know that.
You had told me about, but yeah, Beavis and Butthead self-help book. And you had told me about it, and I just got drunk one night and found it.
I think
it just showed up in my mailbox.
I think you
unbidden. And I was like, what the fuck?
What, chicken soup for the butt? I think you about that book on this show.
I may have.
And I went home and got loaded and like spent, because I remember like looking, there were voluminous amounts, like deleting my history, and it's all like chicken soup for the butt, chicken soup for the butt, like over the course of like 200 or 300 searches. I was just trying to read excerpts. But
you searched for chicken soup for the butt 300 times.
A lot of times. Way more than I should have.
And there are probably some websites that you really don't want to look at.
No,
I'm sure not.
Anyway, we're running a little bit long, and we've got exciting stuff to get to next week, but... boys, it's been fun. Thanks for sitting in for the Courtney Barnett record.
Thank you for recommending that.
Yeah. Ryan, I think some tears fell from his eye of how much he loves this record. Thank you for having us back in the garage. It's always fun to go back to the original, the threesome.
Anytime I can invite you here among the appliances, you're welcome.
Oh, thanks. All right. Well, we'll see you guys next week. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin. We'll see you then.